The Local Thread. Hello, greetings, and welcome to A Moment of Truth. I'm Fletcher Word, publisher of the Sojourner's Truth, and today we are going to discuss some things that are happening in the community, some efforts to improve the lives of those in this community. Today's discussion will be hosted by the Sojourner's Truth reporter, Asia Nail. Asia will be speaking with Dr. Tracy Perryman of Center of Hope Family Services, and with Robert Smith of the African American Legacy Project about his efforts to revitalize a neighborhood and about her efforts to improve the educational experience for students in this community. Enjoy today's Moment of Truth.
Hello, and welcome to A Moment of Truth. This is Asia Nail. So many of us are giving to everyone else, our kids, our work, our community, but somewhere along the way, we honestly lose ourselves. And I was thinking, you know, my mom, she was a single mom working hard in the background, and even myself, I've seen firsthand what running on empty looks like. So today, my guest knows how to turn that burnout into balance. Dr. Tracy Perryman, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting.
Oh, you are so, I'm so excited too. I can't wait to talk to you. Dr. Tracy Perryman is the CEO of the Center of Hope Family Services and creator of the Elevate series. So now, Dr. Perryman, before we dive into your work, take us back. What moment shaped your passion for empowering other people?
I would say that goes back to my earliest memories in school. You know, I was always that child that noticed, the child that was lonesome or felt sad for whatever reason. And I always felt compelled to be that extra friend to someone who is in need. And as I grew older and more mature through high school and college, I found that children gravitated to me. And so still having that sensitivity, I tried to figure out how I could best meet their needs, whether it was through mentoring, whether it was through tutoring. And then I became acquainted with their parents and young working women. And they seemed to gravitate to me as well. Mm-hmm. And so I continued to feel that need in the best way I knew how at the time. And then over the years, I became educated and equipped with the skills to do it effectively and to impact more than 5-10 children, 5-10 women at a time.
Yes. I mean, you're got a big workload, but you seem to handle it so eloquently. I love watching all of your snippets on social media, and they're just very inspiring, very helpful.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been a lot of trial and error. To be honest with you, if you are seeking to grow, it's going to be mostly error. Yeah. But what I try to do is be very honest about what it costs. Mm-hmm. To do the work that I seek to do and some of the mistakes that have been made. You know, for example, when you are internally motivated and you have a high achievement motivation, frankly, you can be a little too good at what you do.
Yeah.
And so you can be a target to people. You know, they will seek you out for advice, for opinions, to troubleshoot, to solve their problems. And you can even enter into spaces wanting to do so well that you lose yourself. I think about my early 20s and my late 20s, you know, when I had more of a focus on family and what it meant to be the best wife and burning myself out.
Yes.
Back then, to the point where I said, you know, I don't even want to be a wife anymore. and then going through the journey professionally, growing something from the ground up and not being able to see the results of your efforts right away, mm-hmm. and dealing with the scrutiny and often the ridicule that it took, and pushing and pushing and pushing because I'm going to prove people wrong. And so I could say it took me until my 40s to really understand what I want to do aside from performance or performing well. And then I was 45 before I really leaned into this is what I want to do and I really don't care who likes it.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely can speak to that in my 40s. It I don't know, it's something about your 40s. Like, you just know who you are and you settle into your confidence, I think, right? Well, I really want to speak to kind of what you were just saying about burnout. I just feel like many of us are just giving, 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 but we don't ever really refill ourselves. So you teach practical ways to lead from wholeness, which I love. What's one shift that really helps people refuel, do you think?
So you must plan quiet time for yourself. Mm-hmm. And when I went through the journey of reconfiguring what my life would look like and what roles I wanted and what roles I didn't want, part of what helped me lead to that decision is that I needed more quiet time in my life to refuel the world, the organization, the church. My marriage was taking too much from me. Mm-hmm. And so when I was able to have just that time to myself, things became so much more clear. And I found that I was actually more productive and more creative when I wasn't being forced to or feeling the pressure to meet anybody's expectations. The second thing is you need to have a vision statement for your life, which I did one very, very late. It was my 40s before I ever drafted one. And here's what I found. If you don't have a vision for yourself, someone else is going to create it for you. Mm-hmm. And you cannot negotiate for the things you want in your life if you don't know what it is you want. So create a vision statement and then know the things that you enjoy without expectation.
Wow. Yes, that is powerful. These expectations will get us all, won't they?
Yes, and all of them are not. Some of them are, many of them are self-imposed.
Yes.
Because we walk into the world so concerned about who we portray and nailing the role instead of nailing the purpose and nailing the desire.
No, you're right. It reminds me like we're just doing, doing, doing instead of being, really. It's like, I feel like people look at what they do as their identity a lot of times, and that is not helpful, right?
No, it's not, because it's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, as we move through different seasons of our lives, the expectations, the roles, and even the capacity shift. Yeah. So a lot of what brings us ladies to crisis is when it's time to move to the next season and we're still stuck in the old season because we're so concerned about how we appear. And I remember being asked probably 10 or 15 years ago, about my musicianship and singing in the arts and, you know, just a question. And I said, well, you know why I do it? Because when nobody cares about what I do in the community anymore, music is something that I can keep. When nobody calls my name, when nobody knows my name, when nobody cares about my name, I'll still have music.
Yeah, that is important. I love music. It's something, it's irreplaceable. And thank you so much for your voice. I always love listening to you sing. I mean, it takes a lot of confidence to get up and sing, not only at church, but in front of your business audience, in front of your social media. I mean, everyone. So thank you for, you know, sharing that gift.
My pleasure. And that's an interesting piece. Actually, I started off in the public sphere as a dancer first when I was 4 at Maumee Valley.
Oh.
And I started playing the piano at 4. So actually I started singing actually at 18 months old. But that was something I did around the house. I didn't do it in a public sphere until I was probably about 9 or 10
okay.
in the church's youth choir, which all of a sudden the director disappeared. We don't know why. And I said, you know what? I think I can do this. So I literally self-appointed myself as the director of the youth choir. And it actually took off. And then they replaced me with a more qualified adult. But it was a catalyst thing. And so the singing, then I was really a background singer. I love being a background singer. And when I started writing music, you know, I said, here's some music that I want to create and I want to sell to a real singer. And I said, I need you guys to get me background singers, and I'm not going to sing. I just want to write and I want to direct. And they said, no, you're it. You're going to sing. And so that really came in 2016, 2017, when I really started stepping out as a solo singer, just as something that Tracy wanted to do, rather than being like a solo singer that subbed when the real solo singer didn't show up.
Yeah.
But I was a sub most of my life and a background singer. And this is really a late development. But I love it because of the ability to express emotions that a lot of people have and are afraid to express. So it's really not about being seen. It's not about the voice, but it's about using the voice as a means to communicate a message and being able to pull all of my experiences together through voice to help people tap into their authentic selves and to see whatever vision they need to see to truly be touched. So it's really an art form for me.
Yeah, I can tell. It does shine through. It does, as an art form, really. Now, with you being an educator, I really want to speak to our listeners that are also educators. Mm-hmm. As far as those who love their students, but they just feel like they're not making a difference anymore, what would you say to help them stay motivated?
First thing you need to do is reassess, why am I here? Why did I start going down this path? And oftentimes when we start meeting burnout, it's been some time. Yeah. And we become disconnected from our initial love and our initial passion. And then sometimes I actually did a workshop for educators. And I said, some of us pursued this because of the stability,
yes,
the health insurance, you know, the minimum pay. And over time that shows. All right. And so when we are losing effectiveness, sometimes that's the crossroads where we need to have the honest conversations. Is this for us? Do we need to pursue another route? Or do we need to support children a different way through administration, through advocacy? Is the classroom really still where we're most effective?
Yeah.
And does it resonate with our first love? So I say that first. And then I ask educators, how much time are you spending on developing and growing yourself as an educator? We all go to professional development. But when is the last time that you went to a professional development that really spoke to your passion as an educator and what you are endeavoring to accomplish? And did you go because you wanted to or because somebody told you to?
Mm.
And what creative ways? I mean, now with technology, we can do a lot of research ourselves.
True.
You can find a lot on YouTube. When's the last time you took a little time just to browse through YouTube and see what other educators are doing? Because I'm inspired every day through YouTube. And then figuring out how I can use those wisdoms and add to my wisdoms. And then also consulting with the children. When's the last time you included your children and your curriculum development and your classroom programming?
That's
because they're honest.
Question.
Oh, they'll tell you if it's not landing.
That's true. Look, that
and a lot of
true.
Times I have sat, usually every time I still teach. I'm teaching theater and music now. And I go into the schools and teach. And I prepare a lesson. And I remember in COVID, I used to teach online. And, you know, it'd be dinner time. My mother would say, well, you're done. You still working. I said, well, I need to sit. And look at what landed and what didn't land. Mm. And there have been times where I'll sit down, take an hour after I get done, and I think through it. And a lot of times, and I'll tell her, I'm going another route because I looked at where their engagement was. And I said, rather than sticking to my predetermined script, if I can build upon what really resonated, mm-hmm. then they're going to grab the concept a lot faster. So I watch reactions, not as an ego thing. Okay, that's what landed. So how can we build upon that and what didn't land, what didn't they understand so that I can be more effective. So I think those are important. And also, who is supporting you? Where's your support system? None of us can do this alone. You have to be surrounded by good teachers who are in it for the right reasons and who still have the energy to consciously and critically self-assess, reflect, and revise.
Yes. Yes to all of that. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. You just made me think about so many different things when it comes to just life. Life has been lifing, you guys, right? So when it comes to just elevating and raising emotionally strong kids, because you said so much about, like, it made me think about social media and how we do all these things for likes, but we're not really looking at necessarily why, like you just said with the children, why are they engaged? How can I really get them to understand what I'm teaching? So with today's kids just facing so much pressure in general with the social media grades at school, what's one thing that you think parents can really do tonight even to help their children feel seen or even safe?
Well, I think the first thing is we need to deal with our own stuff. And we got to education, but we kind of went around the way, and that was for a reason. Because we only can show up and be totally present when we are clear about how we got where we are, what excites us, and what motivates us, and even what are those sore spots, you know? And being honest with ourselves about where we are, where we want to go, where we want to be. Because a lot of times we're not present with children because our minds are so cluttered with things that we were afraid to process. Yes. So first we need to process our own baggage and look at ourselves honestly and mm-hmm. be okay with what we see. And then put the steps in place to be healthy and whole ourselves. That's very important. Now in the short term, with children, it's very simple. Truly be present and observe. A child's eyes will tell you so much if you only watch. When they're quiet, when they speak, why they're quiet, why they speak tells you a lot. Pick up on their nonverbal behaviors. The majority of communication is nonverbal.
True. Yes.
Address their spoken needs and their unspoken needs. They learn through play, and we learn through watching them play and watching them interact. And following up on those things, where there is structure, where there is a tentativeness to their needs, children feel seen and they respond. And then really listen.
Yes.
Without being so quick to speak and to clarify and to be right. Let children talk and do not ask them questions that they can satisfy with a yes or no. Make them open-ended, but give them time to think and respond. We have a hard enough time processing our own emotions. How is a child supposed to really know how to tell us
that's true.
Everything
yes.
that's on their mind? So also knowing the social emotional benchmarks per age and what are appropriate responses for the age. And then also doing the research so we know the appropriate response in turn for age.
Yeah, that is very helpful to our listeners. I know that will be helpful. And it made me think about my grandmother always saying, you have two ears for a reason and one mouth so that you can listen more than you speak. Mm-hmm. So yes, thank you for that actionable tip. Now, as far as parents just bringing home some of that connection or, you know, not therapy, so to speak, but just those therapeutic tools, really. Do you have any simple rituals or routines that you recommend for parents that are trying to figure these things out?
So I always go back to the vision, right? And when I actually teach courses to parents and to moms who want to have a balanced home, balanced career, and prepare themselves for leadership, and I tell them you need to set a vision for your household. And a vision rooted in structure. There needs to be a daily schedule. Children feel secure where there is structure. I didn't say rigidity. I said structure. so they know what to expect mm-hmm. and when. And when they, and if they know what to expect and they know when to expect it, then they feel calm enough to talk and engage. I say, look up, you know, shows that deal with issues for children your age and just ask basic questions about how they're feeling about it. Also ask questions about what they're watching, because that provides you a lot of many opportunities to redirect assumptions that may not be true. So my parents used to watch, you know, MTV and BET, the videos, so that if there was something there, not to shield us completely from, because we're going to see it one way or the other, but to help us understand and make sense of what we're watching. So I remember, you know, in our generation, you know, I think in the 90s, we were the first that really got comfortable with showing our skin.
Yes.
Like, we really brought that through. And so, you know, our parents' generation would talk. And so I remember seeing this old Parliament video, and they were up there in diapers.
Oh, yeah.
So I told my dad, I said, listen, y'all was wearing, I mean, your musical icons were wearing diapers on stage. And here's what he said. He said, but we had sense enough not to go put one on. He said, we understood that that was entertainment. He said, that's the problem. Your generation is confusing entertainment with reality. And we knew the difference. So, of course, there are calming apps, there are meditation apps that can help you and your children relax. But you have to get to the source of what's causing the anxiety. And it is from grown-ups all the way down, is faulty assumptions. Mm-hmm. And where we can correct faulty assumptions about expectations, about beauty, about intellect, because there are multiple intelligences. And where we can affirm our children and their strengths where they are, when the issues come, when the challenges come, they're much better suited to address them, and they're much more comfortable coming to you for help.
Wow, that is amazing. You've helped me tremendously with my own children. I thank you kindly. Now, I do want to shift, because I know your Elevate series doesn't only include educating children, but also women leaders. Mm-hmm. You talk about elevating women leaders, but what about the woman who just really honestly doesn't see herself as a leader yet? Where should she start?
Well, first thing, you lead your household. So all of us are leaders. Someone, there is someone within our sphere or in our circle that looks to us as a figure of support or knowledge, usually. So most of the time we're leading without giving ourselves credit for it.
Okay.
So the first thing is give yourself credit for what you do. The second thing is you can't be ready and get ready at the same time. So you have to start thinking about your future. You need to be putting in place what needs to be done to be the leader that you are imagining in your head. You're probably already doing it, but I'm speaking to the lady that thinks that leadership is being the CEO of a Fortune 500 company
right.
or leading an organization. You have to start getting ready. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll never be ready and you will never be there. Also, it's not about the title of the position. It's about the elements you love. If you're able to convene people and they become excited about a purpose or a project, you're leading. If you're able to come in and help resolve conflicts, you're leading. If you can see need and figure out how to address needs, you're already leading. So forget about the title and spend more time leveraging those strengths that you're already rocking, right? That are the qualities of a successful leader and not just a leader with a title. So I think that those are the things that I would recommend to a lady who doesn't see it yet, but definitely is already operating in her unacknowledged gifts.
Yes, that's the one. I love it. It reminds me of the saying, stay ready and you don't have to get ready. Mm-hmm. And also my newest favorite thing is the best skill set that you can have is figuring it out.
That is so true. That is so true.
Right? So between those two, I really feel like these future women leaders are in good hands with that advice. My last question for you is, I know you do a lot of research when you write your books and just for everything that you do, which is amazing. So my question for you, with all the research that you've done and just your everyday life and the leaders that you meet, in your Elevate series book, Women Leaders, what are the common threads and the similarities that you found with all women that lead?
So I think the first is that they define their own. So I would say this, they have their own definition of success. Times change, context changes, positions change. And so they're not stuck in the position of the moment. And with that said, they're not afraid to make what the world would deem to be mistakes. They're not afraid to be what the world would determine a failure. And with that said, that is the way they find balance. When we define what's important, when we define success for ourselves, then we can say no to a position or a route or avenue that we really don't want. And that leaves space to build homes that we love, sanctuaries that we love. That gives us the confidence to be in tune with our families, because it's a shame to be a success in everyone's eyes and at home. Yeah. You have no connection to your partner, your children. And the results of that will come one day, right?
Yes.
Also balance in our mental wellness, because we're investing time in building ourselves up in things that we enjoy rather than just spending all our time seeking approval from others. Also, ethics and character. Doing right things, even when we don't look or appear right to everybody. Those are the things that help us sleep at night so that we are creative, we are innovative, we're ready to address the challenges of the next day.
Yes.
Creativity. Like you said, you gave the quote, one of the greatest skills is being able to figure things out, right? And not expecting everything in life to be handed to us on a silver platter, right?
Right.
And I would say, finally, that vision. Everything comes from a vision. A vision helps us negotiate what we want and negotiate the steps to get there. The vision is what helps us know when to say yes and when to say no.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Dr. Perryman, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your light and your leadership with us today.
Thank you for the invitation. It was an honor.
Welcome back. This is Asia Nail with A Moment of Truth. And I was wondering, have you ever felt like the stories that shaped us are disappearing? Neighborhoods full of history, yet most of us, honestly, we just never hear the names. We never saw the faces. And my guest today said not on his watch. Mr. Robert Smith is the founder, president, and heart and soul of the African American Legacy Project of Northwest Ohio now for 20 years. He turned preservation into purpose. So welcome to our show.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's an honor. Mm. Well, my first question for you, Mr. Smith, I want you to take us to the beginning. What inspired you to create the AALP 20 years ago?
Oh, if you would look today, you see a plethora of people and organizations interested in the African-American experience. When we got started, it wasn't so. So in many cases, you can say that over the 20 years, we've been very successful. It came down to my growing up in the city and my and our community being so close-knit that you were compelled to know the stories. It was organic. The attorney lived in the same neighborhood as the educator, who lived in the same neighborhood as the physician, who lived in the same neighborhood as the average worker, who lived in the same neighborhood as the minister. It was a very close community, and I had been in media, and some of the stories I had been aware of necessarily didn't reflect the community that I was nurtured in, and it became compelling. One day, I was working with a local TV station, and we got the opportunity to do the last interview. A group of young students I had from the Toledo Public Schools, we did a monthly program with students. It was called Student Television Network.
Okay.
So it was a half-hour program. So they got to interview the last interview of Miss Ella P. Stewart. It was so remarkable and so important. And as the producer, I was standing back but watching everything. But I noticed how Mrs. Stewart, the interview was conducted in her museum. And I noticed how Mrs. Stewart just brought the kids to her. And it generated this curiosity that hasn't stopped to this moment.
Wow. Yeah, that is awesome. Ella P. Stewart. Toledo is amazing. Yeah. Now, people I know are living on streets with such rich history that they've never even heard of it. So what hidden gem in Toledo history makes people really say, wow, I never knew that?
Oh, I don't actually know where to start, but I'll give you one. The first African-American postmaster was Mr. Frank Goldie of the Toledo area. Mr. Goldie was not only the first African-American postmaster of the city, he was over the 10-county area and then moved on to Chicago to operate the largest postal hub in the country. Mr. Goldie was an impressive man. He liked mathematics. But the underlying story was his father passed away.
Okay.
His brother was a year or two older. His brother stopped going to school to prepare a path for Mr. Goldie to get to that point. And Mr. Goldie was so faithful in ensuring that people knew what his brother had done for him. Mm. Hidden gems, many.
Oh, yeah. Toledo's full of them. That's a powerful story, though, to think about the people that really sacrifice for us.
Your grandpa, Miss Nails.
Yeah, yeah. My grandpa was one of them, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And I'm an old soul.
Yeah.
I love the history that is so rich, and you do such a phenomenal job at the museum.
I was blown away. Honestly, if you want to know the truth, not so much me. But our community feels the same way that I do. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the stories.
This is true.
Yeah.
Now, a problem that I see just with cities growing at the rates that they tend to, it seems like culture disappears first a lot of times. So how do we make sure when we're doing economic development that we don't erase our story?
So it's a... You're right to the lack of density as it was early in when we were relegated to a particular part of town.
Yes.
But the passion is still present. If you mention the very name Door Street to African Americans, it elevates a sense of pride that... you can't find under any other circumstance, at least in this community. Even those who haven't experienced it have great curiosities. In 2015, we did a Door Street Live, which was on our property on Door Street. 5,000 people showed up from California to Florida, and certainly throughout the Midwest.
Wow.
That story, that passion, those dreams aren't lost. They may be tabled, but they're not lost.
That's all that matters. We won't lose that.
Well,
and that is powerful, because when we save our history, I mean, in a lot of ways, we're saving our identity.
So critical to this process is we do a lot of tours with young teens and adolescents, and the precursor to them beginning the tours, we always let them know, you know, take a very close look to the images on the wall, because you could well be seeing yourself.
Yes. That's how I felt when I visited your museum on Door Street. It was people that either I've never seen before, people that I haven't seen in years, people that have passed on, just huge legacies and lineages. It was, for anyone listening, you absolutely want to take the time to go to the AALP Museum on Door Street.
So you could look at this and go, that place defies the stereotypes, and you would be correct. But that place is this place where dreams, legacies, and futures are nurtured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the word, nurture, because that's how I felt when I walked in. It was like family, you know? Yeah. So now, as far as just youth and leadership, just community in general, I know that people think success means leaving home. Mm. And I was honestly one of those as well. Mm. I went to college and had my out-of-state experience, but I'm really glad to say that I did come back. So now, what do you say to people just about building right here where they are?
So just a few weeks prior to my getting the opportunity to come and talk to you, we created a subsidiary, and it's called the Art Tatum Historic Business District, which coalesces with what was the Door Street Corridor. The subsidiary is to nurture, define, make sure Mr. Tatum's legacy is coagulated in one place. And more importantly, take that opportunity to build upon the legacy, but also to help to begin to revitalize community. What's important about that is we have a global view. Mm-hmm. Not just a global view, it's three-tiered: neighborhood, city, globally. Mr. Tatum embraced everyone in his first note. In the first note, even for this subsidiary, sets the tone to create the symphony, to create the harmonies that will help to rebuild our community in total. We don't differentiate. We do take a close look at where our community is today, and it's our every effort to get to begin to revitalize it in an extraordinary way. People say, you know, it can never be what it was. And I say, yeah, it could be better.
Yes.
If we take all that we've learned, you've been places, I've been places, and many others, and if we can, you know, this cross-cultural experience on top of it, we can build something King Lincoln District, Columbus, Kansas City Jazz District, along with the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame, Black Wall Street, Tulsa's Rising, what they call. Cleveland's got the Karama Theater. I mean, it's the oldest theater. And you can go across the country and see what communities have done, but it must be community-driven. Sometimes top-down works. Sometimes top-down doesn't work. Portside is a great example, the best minds. But the passion comes from within. So we And we don't suggest that we don't bring people to the table from every source and resource, but we do suggest that we need to have the opportunity to frame this based upon the experiences of the community.
Yes, and that is powerful that it's a global, I mean, it's being where you're planted is okay. You can absolutely become whoever you want to be. And
if you're going to dream.
Yes, and it can become something national. Yeah, leaving home is not required.
So, you know, one of the platforms that we have was we want to nurture young leadership. We started something in 2025 called Next Gen, or the Next Generation of Leadership. Those are students, sophomores and juniors and seniors in high school through sophomores in college. So we're going to give them an opportunity to do projects, to think, to lead. And then we bring in, and we have already done one, we've already had our first meeting. We awarded 9 individuals in October of 2025, and we've had our first charrette, which really, really, I knew it was true, but you know, I was stunned the commentary of the, and how deep the thought these young people have. I'm stunned.
Yeah,
I was stunned.
The next generation is
leaps
and bounds above.
A lot smarter than me.
Me too. I know. I tell my daughter all the time, I don't know if I'm smarter than a fifth grader, but we're going to figure this out. Now, so y'all high school listeners, get ready for the leadership. You know, that's an amazing initiative.
And we're letting them take leadership roles from the outset. What do you want your next charrette or workshop to be? How do you want to frame that? We framed it. I don't think we did a bad job, but I'm sure that they are. I know they are. I mean, we had a young lady 2 years ago. She was a senior in high school, and we gave her the reins to create her own art show, and it was incredible.
I bet. I mean, with you saying that, I was just thinking, how do regular people, how can they see themselves more as leaders? Just people in our community, barbers, hairstylists, single moms, teachers, just regular people, church folks. They're the backbone of our community. How do you feel like we can get them to see themselves as leaders?
Well, I'm going to say this. When you get up every morning, you're leading.
Yes.
So we, when we created the subsidiary, we made sure that we created opportunities for everyone to get involved. And we kind of like listen a lot. And listening can be an art form. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you want to say something, but the best thing you can do is to be silent and watch what unfolds. So I think we have, out of the people that you name, I think we have extraordinary heroes already waiting to flourish. So I think, you know, I'm so in love with, some people say, I always say, be careful of those tools of measurement that you use. If you use traditional tools of measurement to determine success or failure, you could be in trouble because you don't have all those other things, supportive tool platforms to keep you there. You have to look very closely, and I see it all the time. I see cross-generational cooperation and interaction. I see people who normally wouldn't, in the legacy project, who normally wouldn't coalesce with each other on a day-to-day basis, a professional versus a semi-professional. So it's there. We just have to be very much aware. We are fluent in our own conversation.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have said to me many times that you're preserving the past, but you're also preparing people for the future. So now, I know from personal experience that young people don't see how the past really connects to their future a lot of times. I know I didn't. When you're young, a lot of times you don't think that far out or back. So how do you show young people that history does unlock opportunity?
So there are so many stories that would put for the past 11 years, we've been, maybe more, 15 years, we've been producing a magazine for young folk. And on the cover is a national figure of consequence. It may be Robin Roberts. And inside, there's a local figure who has the same background. So what we will do is then we would let the young, we show, see, tell the story of the paths that these people took to get to where they're at. And I can guarantee you we get there. I've been in situations where we may be delivering to schools. I know that, da-da-da-da-da. You know, I'm going, oh, it's working. Again, you have to look very, very closely. The question is, are we influencing enough people on a daily, monthly, or yearly basis? That question is no. You don't have all the tools, you don't have all the money, but there was a period in our history where we didn't have very much at all. There was a song, we didn't have much, but we had each other. And so that premise, no matter what community you hail from, that premise remains the same. For some reason, people think that culturally we all are different, but I'm finding out that we pretty much have many of the, you know, the tear flows the same way down the cheek.
Yes, those human tears. Yes, I agree. We are all very much the same when it comes to the human experience.
Yes.
Now, I know that when it comes to representation, there are things that are missing from textbooks, of course, but most of us, we just didn't see ourselves in history growing up. So now, how did that absence really fuel your mission? And what do people still search for in the stories that you're talking about?
Probably year two in the process. I noticed this common theme. It was family, it was a strong desire for education, it was a religious and moral center. You know, it was a desire for the next generation to be a little bit better than the past generations. It was a high work ethic. And, you know, and that belies any stereotype that's out there. Circumstances put people in particular situations, but the will to achieve brings you out of it. So in that story, I don't care who you are, if you close your eyes and tell that story, you don't know who you're talking about. But within the context of this community, that's what saved us.
That's what saved us. And now you have those little textbooks that go to the schools, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure that makes a big difference.
You know, interestingly enough, those books are also in high demand by a lot of adults.
Really?
There's a lot of history.
I believe that.
There's a lot of history. First African American, first person, the lady who invented LASIK surgery was African American, and on and on and on and on and on. So, you know, there are nuggets of history that will compel you to read more or engage more. So we, you know, in Southern Ohio, the only African-American to ever own an automobile manufacturing company was in Southern Ohio. Only lasted for a while. What was hidden because of technology, it far more broadened than it was in the past. You had to search deeply. And there's still a search, but also there's now a thirst. So we know that across generations, The thing that I guess the thing that I want to do is I feel comfortable now knowing that the Legacy Project will likely be around long after I'm gone.
Absolutely, it will. Mm. I believe that it will.
Yep.
Now, what do you want people to like not only learn when they go through the museum, but how do you want them to feel when they walk through the African American Legacy Project?
I wrote an article. I can't tell you what, probably for a newsletter. I'm not sure what. But it was based upon the consistency of experiences that people have. And after a while, I noticed one word kept coming out of people's, when people responded to being in a space. And it was wow. So the article title was, "We Get Lots of Wows." Mm-hmm. And we still do. I mean, they're just, it's part history, it's part relationship, it's part the experience of being in the room. You know, sometimes you can walk in, I can smell history. You know,
what's it smell like?
The wafts. That aroma. You ever smell a whole newspaper? No.
I love it. Look, I'm one of those that loves a book over my Kindle reader. Absolutely. I want to smell the page. Yeah. I want to get the whole experience.
Yeah.
I think you've answered all of my questions, Mr. Smith. I absolutely want to know, just in to wrap this up, what is in the future for AALP? I mean, you've done so much, but I know you're a dreamer and you're also someone that speaks things into existence. So what's up next for you?
Really, this Tatum Project means a lot to the city of Toledo. We think we have, where we're located, we always say we're at the intersection of yesterday and tomorrow.
That's wonderful.
We think we're at the junction where we can create this cultural corridor on top of the revival of a community, on top of the opportunity to draw tourists into the area, but more importantly, find a way for our community to congeal. We can be so much better as a community through conversation. Those synergies created 1 + 1 = 3. I mean, that's across our entire community. So my goal is not so much about physical presence. It's about our taking our community and using Tatum to take our entire city to the next level.
And I believe that you will. I do. I see it in your future, our future.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Mr. Smith. And thank you for preserving our history.
Hey, and thank you for the big smile.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. I want to thank Dr. Tracy Perryman from the Center of Hope Family Services and Mr. Bobby Smith of the African American Legacy Project of Northwest Ohio. Thank you to WGTE and the Sojourner's Truth. I am Asia Nail. This has been A Moment of Truth.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.